Imagine discovering a letter from your spouse marked "to be opened only in the event of my death." What would you do? This is the impossible situation facing Cecilia Fitzpatrick, whose seemingly perfect life is about to unravel. In a quiet Sydney suburb, Cecilia's discovery will connect three women who've never met and force each to confront devastating moral choices about justice, forgiveness, and protecting those they love. Like Pandora opening her mythical jar, some secrets can never be contained once released. What happens when the person you thought you knew best has been hiding something unimaginable? And more importantly, once you know the truth, can you ever go back? Cecilia Fitzpatrick runs her life with military precision. As Sydney's top Tupperware consultant and president of St. Angela's School PNC, she maintains a color-coded calendar system: blue for husband John Paul, pink for daughters, green for school, and red for Tupperware. Her immaculate home makes her the envy of mothers in their affluent North City community. While searching the attic for her daughter's history project, Cecilia discovers an envelope in her husband's handwriting: "To be opened only in the event of my death." When she mentions it during their FaceTime call while he's away, John Paul visibly pales. He desperately pleads for her to leave it unopened, dismissing it as just an old letter. As days pass, previously overlooked details gain significance. Her daughter mentioning hearing her father crying in the shower, his emotional distance, their dwindling intimacy. Late one night, after checking on her sleeping daughters, Cecilia breaks the seal. The words, "My darling Cecilia, if you're reading this, then I've died," become the first crack in her perfect marriage. While Cecilia's world implodes, two other women face crises in the same Sydney suburb. Tess O'Leary has fled Melbourne after her husband Will and cousin Felicity, also her best friend and business partner, confessed they've fallen in love. Humiliated, Tess takes her 6-year-old son Liam to her mother's home, enrolling him at St. Angela's while struggling to explain their new situation. Rachel Crowley, the school secretary at St. Angela's, carries a tragic burden. 28 years ago, her 17-year-old daughter Janie was found strangled in a park. Though the case remains unsolved, Rachel believes Connor Whitby, now a PE teacher at St. Angela's, was responsible. Her grief has dominated her life, distancing her from her son while she fixates on her grandson Jacob, who will soon move to New York. These women's lives intersect at St. Angela's. Tess begins a passionate affair with Connor, her high school boyfriend. Cecilia, grappling with John Paul's letter, finds herself drawn to Rachel. None realize how their separate dramas connect to a single tragic event, and how their collision course will force them to confront buried truths. "I killed her, Cecilia. I killed Janie Crowley." These words instantly transform Cecilia's understanding of her husband. The devoted father she thought she knew had strangled a teenage girl nearly 30 years ago and escaped justice. John Paul confesses that at 17, he dated Janie. When she broke up with him in Wattle Valley Park, mentioning another boy and laughing nervously, something in him snapped. He strangled her, covered her body with her school blazer, and placed his mother's rosary beads in her hands before fleeing. For Cecilia, this knowledge is unbearable. She swings between rage, disbelief, and calculation. She drinks wine despite Lent, snaps at her daughters, and neglects her business. At night, she thinks, "I'm a murderer's wife, and I'm an accessory to murder." The moral dilemma torments her. Report John Paul for justice but destroy her family? Or protect her daughters by keeping the secret, becoming complicit herself? When John Paul returns early, he offers to turn himself in if she wishes. Watching videos of the Berlin Wall falling with her daughter, Cecilia weeps, feeling trapped behind her own wall of secrecy with no clear path to freedom. Good Friday becomes the day when all three women's lives catastrophically intersect. Rachel, learning police won't pursue Connor Whitby for Janie's death, drives aimlessly through suburbs, consumed by grief. Spotting Connor crossing with a kite, 28 years of pain crystallizes into a terrible impulse. She accelerates, intending to kill the man she believes murdered her daughter. In that horrifying instant, 6-year-old Polly Fitzpatrick pedals directly into Rachel's path. There's a sickening thump, squealing brakes, and Rachel sits frozen, knowing with perfect sick certainty what she's done. At the hospital, Cecilia and John Paul receive devastating news. While Polly survived with a concussion, her right arm requires amputation due to severe damage. Cecilia protests desperately. She's right-handed. She's 6 years old. In the hospital corridor, Rachel encounters Cecilia, who reveals John Paul killed Janie. When John Paul appears, he confesses to Rachel, "It was an accident. I never meant to hurt her because I loved her." Despite her fury, Rachel tells them to go to their injured daughter, recognizing she's caused enough damage to their family. In Polly's accident aftermath, each character confronts forgiveness's true cost. Cecilia accepts her role as an amputee's mother, knowing she must advocate for her daughter in a world fixated on physical perfection. When John Paul collapses with guilt, she demands composure, gesturing at their injured daughter, "Look how we've paid." Though their marriage is damaged, they'll remain together for Polly. When the child reaches for an Easter egg with her missing hand, Cecilia takes her left hand, helping her adapt. Rachel sits before her television, aware she could have John Paul arrested any time. She burns with rage, imagining his hands around Janie's neck, yet remembers Polly's pink helmet and her own role in the accident. She decides to eventually invite John Paul over to describe Janie's final moments. She'll make tea, but withhold forgiveness. She resolves to retire, sell her house, and move forward. Meanwhile, Tess and Will rebuild their marriage, addressing his midlife crisis and her social anxiety. Despite their pain, they hold hands in darkness, agreeing to give their marriage until Christmas. Life is filled with undiscovered truths. The epilogue reveals that Janie Crowley actually died from an undiagnosed aortic aneurysm caused by Marfan syndrome, a genetic condition affecting connective tissue. While John Paul's hands may have hastened her death, it was predetermined by her condition. The pathologist, ill with influenza and respecting the family's wishes, missed this crucial evidence. This medical truth casts bitter irony over everything. John Paul's guilt, Cecilia's moral struggle, Rachel's decades of misplaced grief, and the chain of events leading to Polly's accident all stemmed from a condition silently lurking in Janie's genes. Easter Sunday brings tentative new beginnings. Cecilia watches over Polly's hospital bed. Rachel cuddles with grandson Jacob. Tess considers rebuilding with Will for Liam's sake. What connects them is recognizing that life rarely offers neat conclusions, only complicated choices between competing values. Sometimes, barriers we thought permanent crumble unexpectedly. Perhaps the most important question isn't whether to open Pandora's jar, but how to live with what escapes, how to find hope amid the chaos of unintended consequences.